Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
My home is not on this earth, not in this world.
So all over the country, all over a number of countries, people are remembering that people lost their lives in two massive wars. And I want to talk this evening about remembering. And that's kind of the first thing that I just want to highlight, as it's part of today's kind of memorial across the nation. I was converted in a Methodist church many years ago now, too long to remember. And I used to look at the Methodist history. I went to Methodist Bible College. And one of the things that always moved me was an account when John Wesley first started preaching in the open air. And in fact, he didn't like preaching, even the thought of preaching in the open air. But he was actually barred from preaching in the Anglican church. And his friend George Whitfield was already preaching down in Bristol. And so he was persuaded to go on a hill. I've actually stood there. And as the miners were coming out of the collieries, the pits, he preached to thousands of them. And the account said that they were so moved with the gospel that tears were kind of streaking down the black kind of sooty faces of these miners. And actually loads of them got saved. And the kind of Methodist revival started with the very poor in some of the most difficult places in our nation. 100 years later, William Booth, who was saved and was a preacher in the Methodist church, he wanted to bring some ragged boys, some of the very poorest of the poor, to the church service. So he marched them all in and they sat down. And basically it says this: the minister of the Wesleyan church, instead of being pleased, was angry with Booth and told him next time to bring them through the back door and seat them where they couldn't be seen, as he had feared the Methodist church, that is, as Booth had feared, of his day, was becoming too respectable. So within 100 years, what started with a movement for the poor, our nation changed, actually, in an amazing way, became very respectable, so that someone like Booth, who had a passion for the poor people, actually was rejected. And so he actually, a bit like Wesley did in the Anglican church, he marched out of the Methodist church, in the end started the Salvation Army, and basically to reach the poorest of the poor. 100 years and they'd forgotten. Remembering is really important. Because if you don't remember the past, whether it is wars or whether it is your roots in terms of church life, etc., then actually it's easy to go and just lose the plot, lose a fact of where you are supposed to be ministering. I want to look at some passages in the book of Deuteronomy, and Deuteronomy 8 and Deuteronomy 15. And basically, Moses is trying to help the people of God not to forget where they've come from. And so he says this: be careful to obey all the commands I'm giving you today, then you will live and multiply, and you will enter and occupy the land the Lord swore to give you. See, they've been 40 years in the wilderness, being provided by God for all their food. And then verse 2, remember how the Lord your God led you through the wilderness these 40 years, humbling you and testing you to prove your character and to find out whether or not you would obey his commands. But that is the time to be careful. Beware that in your plenty you do not forget the Lord. Has rings of the Methodist church there, doesn't it? Remember, actually, when you become middle class, when you're prospering, that you forget, actually, your roots. Your God and disobeys commands, regulations and decrees that I'm giving you today. For when you've become full and prosperous and have built your fine homes to live in, and when your flocks and herds have become very large and your silver and gold have multiplied along with everything else, be careful. Do not become proud at that time and forget the Lord. It's kind of, he's really urging them, remember, who rescued you from slavery in the land of Egypt. Do not forget that he led you through the great and terrifying wilderness with its poisonous snakes and scorpions, where it was hot and dry. He gave you water from the rock. He fed you with manna in the wilderness, a food unknown to your ancestors. He did this to humble you and test you for your own good. He did all this so you would never say to yourself, I have achieved this wealth with my own strength and energy. Remember the Lord your God. Fifth time in these verses. He's the one who gives the power to be successful in order to fulfill the covenant he confirmed to your ancestors with an oath. So it's really important that we remember, and he wanted the people of God to remember, actually, let's have the next slide, these things, that he wanted them to remember the desert. He wanted them to remember that for 40 years, he provided everything for them. They were a supernatural people. Every day, God provided. They couldn't provide for themselves, just no way to do it. Couldn't have water. At one point, it says that their shoes never wore out. I bought a new pair of vacuum boots the other day, and I was told when I bought them that they would resole them because they're very expensive ones as soon as they kind of disintegrate a bit, which they do fairly regularly with me. Just think, 40 years of walking and they don't wear out, no resoling. Be interested in what they smelt like, I guess, but that's another question, doesn't answer it here. So what Moses is saying is, when you go from the desert to a land that's prosperous, when you go from where God provided every day in terms of manna and quails and water to a land that he's provided, but you can now work, don't forget that it's the same Lord who gave you the land who also provided for you in the wilderness. Don't forget. And so I want to now move to Deuteronomy 15. You see, Moses is helping them to transition now in their heads from God providing straight into their hands to their hands providing for themselves, but God is the one that's giving them the ability. Okay, so that's the transition that's taking place. And actually, it's a bit like growing up as well. That you kind of transition from someone providing to providing for yourself. And what happened is this, that in the desert, there was no poor people. Because everybody had an equal share of the manna and the quails and the water. Literally for 40 years, everybody had access. Fantastic. And now as they come into the promised land, there was going to be times when people got ill, when people got onto hard times, when wars came, all sorts of things would mean that people were unable to produce themselves. And actually, poor people would be part of the community, which hadn't happened for 40 years, okay? So now Moses wants them to remember the fact that God provided, wants them to remember that it's his land, Okay, I'm working through this quite diligently because I want to help you see what's coming next. And now he wants them to have the right attitude in helping the people who come under hard times. And so, basically, in Deuteronomy 15, he's addressing, what do you do now when people become poor? Okay, when people come on hard times. So, remember the poor. Next one. First of all, he says this, don't be tight-fisted. Deuteronomy 15:7 says, but if there's any poor Israelite in your towns when you arrive in the land and your God is giving you, do not be half-hearted or tight-fisted towards them. I love it. I think the word tight-fisted must have worked 3,500 years ago. It actually works now. You know, it's a kind of great kind of thing. We all know what a tight-fisted person is. Just won't let go of their money. Wants to keep hold of it. Instead, Moses says, be generous and lend to everyone who has need. The NIV says, be open-handed. Okay? Which is great. Tight-fisted is, I've produced this now. It's your fault that you've become poor. I'm going to keep what I've got. And open-handed is this. I've produced it, but God has given me it. What is mine is God's. And if the poor need it, then open hand. So first thing it says is don't be tight-fisted. Second thing, next verse in 15:9, don't be mean-spirited. Do not be mean-spirited and refuse someone a loan because the year of cancelling debt is close at hand. If you refuse to make the loan and the needy person cries out to the Lord, you would be considered guilty of sin. So what's he getting at here? Well, there was an injunction to really help the poor from being continually in debt. That actually any loans that were given after a number of years would actually be written off. It's a bit like your student loan. But I don't know, that's about 100 years. No, 30 years. I don't know what it is these days. But the reality is that there's this kind of break in the kind of loan period so that if someone was still not being able to pay it off, and they wouldn't be under servitude for the rest of their life to the person lending it, the loan, there would be a year of cancelling debts. And that was written in every so many years. But you see, what happened is, let's take Tom. Tom gets very needy, and he's poor, his kids are suffering, and I think, okay, I'm going to loan him some money. Next year, I've just noticed in my diary, is the year for cancelling debts. I'm never going to get this money back. I have no hope of giving me my money back. I think I'll wait a year. Might have died by then, but I'll still wait till that cancelling debt period is off. And then there's many years to go for him to pay it back. That's what he said is, that's mean-spirited, okay? And basically, the loan should be thought of as a gift. You know, let's give it him. So, don't be tight-fisted. Don't be mean. Don't be mean-spirited. And then the next verse, 15:10, says, give generously to the poor, not grudgingly, for the Lord your God will bless you in everything you do. If God loves a cheerful giver, why is it supposed to hurt? You give till it hurts. I like that little caption, because that's what people say. Give till it hurts. And that's a grudging attitude to that, that little comic strip there. But the reality is, God loves a cheerful giver. And you know, when you are struggling, when you haven't got much, when you've got some big bills coming, it's actually easy to give, but not in a good way. And, you know, it's just hard to have a good heart sometimes when you think, I've not got enough myself, and now there's this big give. Now there's some needy people. Basically, we need not to be reluctant, unwilling, complaining, resentful. We actually need to give generously with a good heart, because it's God's given it us, open-handed. And then the next, don't get cynical. Cynicism is a terrible British disease. You get it all over the world, but we've got it by the bucket load. There will always be some in the land who are poor. That is why I'm commanding you to share freely with the poor and with the other Israelites in need. You know, Claudia Hammond is a BBC researcher and does programs. She was researching some stuff on the poor, and it says this: public attitudes research in the UK would suggest that a start, many of us think that if you're poor, it's your fault. Okay? And she says, it also seems that in some ways, this attitude is hardening. So effectively, our cynical attitude is it's their fault. The difficulty is, for some, it is their fault. Okay? I mean, that's the truth. And we all know the stories of the people who are on benefits, who are trying to get things, and they've got the biggest telly in the world. And you know those stories? Go. I literally was with a friend, and he'd been into Wetherspoons a few weeks ago. And it was full, lunchtime, 12 o'clock, he's a try guy, and of people, kids, and... And he was saying to the bar, why is it so full? He said, oh, it's gyro day, which meant that it's the benefit day. And his attitude was so cynical. Do you know what I mean? That actually, well, why are we giving? Why, you know, I couldn't do that when I was that age. And do you understand this whole thing that when there's poor in the land, actually we've got to watch our hearts? Even if some of the stories are true, that is still not a reason to actually not understand that God has said, there's going to be poor amongst you. And a lot of them, effectively, it's not their fault. And even if it is, we need to bless. You know what? God, who was rich in mercy when we were total sinners, died for us. That is massive generosity to people who deserved nothing. So, then there's another verse a little bit earlier on in this Deuteronomy, which says this, which is completely the opposite, okay? There should be no poor amongst you, for the Lord your God will greatly bless you in the land he's given you as a special possession. So, what's Moses talking about? There's going to be poor, and then there shouldn't be poor. Okay? So, what's all that about? Well, the reality is, they're both true. There will be poor, but there'll be enough if people were open-handed, generous, caring, not cynical, to share what they've got so that the poor will be fed and looked after. That's basically what Moses is saying. So you've got the poor, and there should not be any poor. Now, we actually find in the New Jerusalem church a kind of synopsis, a micro example of this in action. It's almost like a glimpse of what this was all about. And it says in Acts 4:34, there was no needy person among them, because those who owned land and houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give all those in need. They are needy people, no needy people. And that's exactly what happened in the early church. Remarkable. Absolute poverty eradicated for a season in the people of God in Jerusalem. You know, how many politicians would love to not only want that, but deliver that? And that's exactly what it is. Amazing, isn't it? See, that is a picture of the new heaven and the new earth, where all suffering, all poverty, all abuse, all everything that is sinful and bad is eradicated. And you can see, basically, there was enough there in the church to actually help. Now, the Roman Caesars and the Roman leaders over years, they hated the Christians. But one of them said, these Christians not only feed their own poor, but they feed all ours as well. And that's the church of Jesus Christ. And so, remember the poor was a massive thing to a people who could produce for themselves. So it's like God's given us hands and heads and ability. He's given us the means to produce, the means to create. And actually the same is now, he's given the means to help those who for some reason or other are not in a position to do it. So let's just bring this into a land. We remember the fact that today people died years ago in two great wars, and there's people dying in wars all over the world. We're remembering that God has provided for us the means that we can provide for other people. Remembering the Lord's provider. And then Jesus said this: when I've died and rose again, I want you to do something. I want you to get some bread, and I want you to get some wine, and I want you to break that bread and that wine and drink that wine. And I want you to do it in remembrance of me. He didn't want to forget. See, it's easy to forget. It's easy to forget as churches grow, as people get friends, as meetings are good, you know, it's like it can easily get like a big social club, you know, which is not a bad thing, please. You know, we want everybody to be in good relationship, and that actually it becomes the center of life, you know, the community together. That's a good thing. But if we don't remember the reason that that is all possible, then we've completely lost the plot. Completely missed what salvation is all about. And so Jesus says, as often as you meet, which is why we do it every week, do this in remembrance of me. So we want to raise a ton of money for the poor this month. Generally, we want to give thousands away. Our record is 33,000 or something like that. Last year, I think we gave 23,000, which is just a massive amount of money. You know, I'm not sure what number I want to, you know, I'd love us to break records on giving to the poor. I mean, that's honestly. And we look at our budget sometimes and we think, hey, we still need some more money to keep this church going. But you know what? As a whole leadership team, we forget that. And we say, we want to just give a ton to the poor. We just want to give. I just want to encourage you this. What would you want to give? And then maybe add a little bit more. Just think, actually, can I go a little bit more? That's what I mean. I'm challenging myself. What a bit more? And sometimes it's a bit easier than others. Sometimes I've got enough money and it, you know, I think, wow. Other times it's a struggle. I'm thinking, oh, how is it going to happen? But you know what? Let's remember the Lord our God has given us everything so that we can be generous to those who haven't.